The Catalyst Quartet is really excited about their latest project. It's a collection of recordings celebrating historically Black composers who wrote original works for string quartet. They're hoping to have 4, maybe 5 recordings in this set. And the first volume was recently released. It celebrates the music of Samuel Coleridge Taylor. I talked with violist Paul Araya recently, who really hopes that people will take the time to understand this composer's authentic voice. That's what we explore this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. I was just going to tell you, I did a little snooping around. This would have been the 10th anniversary year for Catalyst Quartet.
Exactly.
And so what happened? Were you guys able to do anything to mark the decade that you've been together?
Well, I mean, this release has been a really sort of a little bit of a triumphant kind of release for us. It's getting a lot of attention from the press, and from people are actually getting really excited about programming the music. So, I mean, that's a pretty nice sort of 10th anniversary present. But originally, we had another project. Sort of everything kind of got bumped back a couple years. We have another project that we call CQ Minute, which is we commissioned 10 composers, diverse composers, to write like micro string quartets. So that was supposed to be our big celebration for the 10th anniversary, but that's going to sort of unfold over the next 2 and 3 seasons, and it's going to become a video album as well.
Oh, that's cool. What does a video album look like?
So it's going to be like a YouTube, like a compilation of each little mini piece will be a sort of like, you can imagine like a little indie film that kind of has its own vibe, but together they will kind of connect to tell a sort of narrative.
Cool.
It's just the point of the project is to reach out to audience members in sort of the digital age, how people are more used to basically taking in content these days. And this, I mean, we actually thought up this idea before COVID. And so people are taking in a lot of online content now. But even before that, we were noticing from our YouTube analytics that, you know, the average view length of a YouTube video is anywhere between like 1.5 and 2.5 minutes. The attention spans are not very long. And instead of trying to fight that and sort of argue it, we decided, what if we could fill that time with the most profound kind of content that we could offer? And that was the genesis behind that idea.
Interesting, because I know I have to wonder if there isn't like, you know, internet fatigue, because there's, you know, it's like if you want to experience anything over the last year, you've had to do it online. And it makes me wonder how people will feel about that, you know, once we have the opportunity to get out into the concert halls again. What do you think?
Well, I agree wholeheartedly, but luckily this is a program that's also going to be able to be performed live. And there might be a version of the project where we could sort of project the films like while we perform them live. So in that way, we're still getting the interactive, like multi-dimensional artistic aspect, but it's going to fill that need that people are definitely going to have for live experience.
Paul, can you remind people who may be just discovering the Catalyst Quartet how you came to be and where the name comes from too?
Right. So the Catalyst Quartet was, as we were discussing, formed about 10 or 11 years ago by an organization called the Sphinx Organization, which is, it started as a string competition for Black and Latino string players, like a concerto competition kind of thing. And I mean, that competition started in the 90s, in the late 90s. But since then, the Sphinx Organization has sort of grown other branches. It does education work. It does grant work. So it fosters diversity in classical music on a broader scale now. So 10 years ago, they approached the original members of the Catalyst Quartet. And then a string quartet is not normally put together like that. Usually you pick out the people you're going to play with, usually grow up playing together in school, you get coaching. So this was a little bit of a unique situation. So in the end, our formation with me and our former violinist, Jesse Montgomery, sort of lasted a pretty decent amount of time. And that's sort of the genesis of how we first began. But we sort of have always been fascinated with using the string quartet to accomplish something more than just playing good concerts, to to tell a story, to evoke social change. And so the name Catalyst Quartet, we thought, was a really proper fit for the idea of using music as a means of change, whether or not it's changing the audience, you know, like a personal change in the audience, or a deeper fundamental change in the music world. Because, I mean, we would like to see a lot more diversity and access across. And that's one of our other missions, as well as just playing great music.
Did I just hear you say Jessie Montgomery is no longer with the Catalyst Quartet? Because she's featured on this recording.
Correct. So Jessie recorded, she was with us when we recorded this album in the summer of 2019. But due to COVID, it's a little bit of a delayed release. But I don't know if you guys know, Jessie Montgomery is a phenomenal composer in her own right. And so she's sort of really, really taken off, which we're super happy and glad about. But that dimension of her artistic life has sort of taken over to the point where she had to step down from the quartet.
I was actually wondering when I saw her on here, I was like, oh my God, how does she do that too?
Yeah.
Because she really has just been skyrocketing lately with her talents as a composer. Okay, great. Thank you. Your latest project is a multi-volume set of recordings called Uncovered, and you're shedding light on composers who really do deserve more attention. How did you determine which composers would be part of this project?
Right. So this was actually a little bit easier than it may have seemed, because number one, we wanted the composers to be historically important. So that means not living composers, because that would really be a lot of composers. So we decided to go with historically important Black composers who had original string quartet works. So that basically narrowed it down to Samuel Coleridge Taylor, Florence B. Price, William Grant Still, Perkinson, and Chevalier de Saint-Georges. And in our research so far, those are the composers that we know that have original string quartets.
Your first recording does highlight the works of Samuel Coleridge Taylor, three string quartet pieces that also invite special guests to join you. Tell me a little bit about Stuart Goodyear. What was his reaction when you asked him to be part of this project?
Well, Stuart is an incredible pianist. And it was definitely one of the highlights of my musical career to get to collaborate with him. It's just stunning sound quality, stunning attention to detail. And he really was, from the second that we asked him, he was fully on board. To the point that when we arrived for our first rehearsal, he actually had like this huge list of like corrections that he had found from the score, which finding the correct notes for a lot of these works is really difficult. Some of these works don't have proper score. Some of them have no score. Some of them only exist in manuscript form. But so Stuart was the kind of guy that he knew exactly interpretively what he wanted to do right from the get-go. He felt very connected to the music, and you can definitely hear it. It was an enormous pleasure, and words can't express how much his dedication added to the mission of the project, which is really to like not only to record these works, but to give them their true in-depth due, you know?
What do you want people to know about Samuel Coleridge Taylor, the composer?
Well, you know, it's funny. From a lot of the reviews that have been coming out on this album, you see a lot of comparisons to Dvorak. You see a lot of comparisons to Brahms. To lesser-known classical music audiences, some refer to him as the Black Mahler. And what I would say is that Samuel Coleridge Taylor has his own unique voice. And it's been a real pleasure to be able to dive into enough repertoire and to deep enough to really get a feel for it. But what I would say is that he has his own beautiful place in the Romantic canon. He has a very particular, striking voice. And I would like more audiences to get to know him for his own authentic voice.
Can you describe that authentic voice for me? Like, when I listen to these three works on this recording, my immediate reaction is, oh, there's something about it that sounds familiar, but then there is something a little different, and I can't quite put my finger on it. Can you help me do that?
Well, you know, I think the fact that you can't quite put your finger on it kind of is kind of, you kind of hit the nail on the head that you can't really put it into words, but if I had to sort of do some kind of a, you know, approximation or how I at least feel about it, I find his music to be particularly soulful. And full of lots of character, lots of many characters. He can, on the drop of a dime, he can switch from, you know, a joyful character to a melancholy character. And it's really interesting to hear all the different influences that come from being such a unique cultural figure, being an Afro-British composer. I think you can hear many, many different elements of his mixed culture. And so it's hard to put into words, but those are some of the things that I get from it for sure.
What is unique about this piano quintet that you'd really like us to be aware of and listen for?
Well, I mean, I guess the unique thing about it is that it's such a gem and that people don't really know it well enough. You know, it has all of the characteristic flair and it's like a party piece in the same vein of like the Dvorak quintet or the Brahms quintet. It really is. It has that sort of like high octane. It has so much content, you know, highs and lows. Pretty epic piece, even though it is an early work for him. He definitely was inspired by that style of writing, and he really nailed it. And I think that the most unique thing is that, you know, I really, really do feel that any other composer that didn't have the hurdles in life that he had to face, that piece would be much more well known. Like the Doknani quintets are very well known. There are many other piano quintets that have that degree of beauty and epicness that are more well known.
What part of this piano quintet do you most look forward to performing every time you've gone through it? Is there a section that you just get really excited about?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, there are many. I mean, I think the opening is really, really triumphant. It's really unique because it has the typical heroic, all the strings are in octaves, you know, and the piano is just kind of doing the piano concerto kind of backdrop thing. And it's just so epic, but it's also at the same time, it's kind of like inward and it's kind of soulful. But the part that really fires me up is the last movement. The last movement is just a really, really unique, it has some really unique, like, folky characters, and it has a lot of virtuosity. I mean, Samuel Coleridge Taylor was a virtuosic violinist himself. That was actually his primary instrument before he started getting deeper into composition. So the string writing is very, has a lot of flair, and it has a lot of good, fun stuff.
I was thinking when you mentioned the folk element, I mean, that really was one of his things that he really focused on, which maybe that's why he is sometimes compared to Dvorak, for example, because Dvorak was looking at the folk elements of his homeland. Do you think maybe that's why?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't say that it's unfair to make those comparisons. Like, I do it myself because he's a self-admitted fan of Dvorak. He was. And he was also a fan of Brahms, and he's actually on record with a quote saying that he hoped to do with the Negro folk songs what Dvorak and Brahms did for their respective, you know, cultures and ethnicities. So he definitely embraced that, and it's totally fair to make that comparison. I just wish that people also started to get to know his own unique voice.
They will, don't worry. It just takes us a while. Yeah. We always think we have to compare things to other things so that we can convince other people that they should spend time with it, right?
Absolutely.
Anthony McGill is the featured clarinetist on the quintet in F sharp minor. And for those people who don't know who Anthony is, among many other things, he's the principal clarinet with the New York Philharmonic. Why did he want to be part of this project?
Well, I've had a chance to hear him talk about it, and he feels a great personal connection to the music. He said something to the effect of when we first sat down to read the quintet on our first rehearsal, he said, "Wow, like, I feel like I'm home." It sort of struck him viscerally right away that he had this connection to the language and to just that very soulful quality, which I think is almost at its peak in the clarinet quintet. It's definitely the most soulful of on the record.
What made it fun for you to perform it?
Well, for the very first thing is it was an extreme honor and privilege to play with Anthony McGill. You know, the viola and the clarinet, I'm the violist of the Catalyst Quartet, and the viola and the clarinet and a lot of these clarinet quintets share a very special relationship. You know, they're sort of like, the clarinet is sort of like the secret twin of the viola, where we have this, like, we take up the husky middle grounds of the sound quality, and we share a lot of roles. Like, for instance, in the beginning of the first movement of the clarinet quintet, we have a lot of stuff in octaves and in unisons. It makes this sort of haunting sound. I don't know if anybody's ever heard it. The sound of a clarinet viola in unison. I mean, Max Bruch has done it many times in a lot of his works, and it's a really, really special kind of haunting sound. So I would say that combination is always a joy in clarinet quintets, but especially in this one.
The second movement, as I was listening to that, it almost sounds like it has folk or spiritual influences in it, especially in that clarinet line. Just so tender, almost like a lullaby.
Definitely. I think we all feel the exactly same way. Even though Samuel Coleridge Taylor didn't explicitly say that any of the motifs or any of the melodies in any of these movements were directly from spirituals, you definitely get the sense that he was somehow influenced. And, you know, what I said before about his quotes, about him being very interested in using that folk material in an authentic way, you can definitely tell that it's in there.
Are there other movements or parts of this quintet for clarinet that you'd like to talk about, maybe that you especially enjoy and you want to make sure that we pay close attention to?
It's hard not to have the second movement be the favorite because it is sort of has the most gravitas. But the scherzo movement is, I think, maybe one of my secret favorites. It's a little gem, too. It's a real devil to try to put together. It's super light. It's super quick. It has all these shifting accents. Once again, it has the pairing. I get a lot of pairs with the clarinet. The violins have a lot of pairs. And it's sort of this sweeping, beautiful, leggero, characterful little piece. And then, all of a sudden, it's like the most, like, beautifully chill, flirtatious. It's such an incredible character shift. And it's maybe one of my little favorite gems of the whole quintet is this trio section. It's just, the viola has this counter line that sort of dances around this really charming long line from the clarinet. And you get to get really into those really husky, soft colors that only a clarinet can do. It's just beautiful.
The piece that's sandwiched in the middle is the Fantasy Stück by Samuel Coleridge Taylor. What is special about this piece that you'd like to bring to our attention?
Well, my favorite thing about the Fantasy Stück are the diversity of characters that he's able to fit into one little string quartet. I mean, usually a string quartet, in a serious form, a sonata form, has a very set structure. It has your medium tempo opening. It has, a slow movement, a scherzo type thing, or sometimes no scherzo, it jumps right to the finale. And it's sort of, you're sort of set with a certain mood the entire piece, whether or not you go on a little bit of a journey with the piece. But what's incredible about having five separate fantasy pieces like Samuel Coleridge Taylor does is that every single movement is like an entire sound world unto its own. This highly like palpitating, like viscerally emotional first movement. It's full of like joyful anxiety. The second movement is so lush and such long lines and such sweeping gestures. The third movement is this devilish little folk song. Really, really virtuosic and really charming. The fourth movement is a total shift to left field. This like stately yet romantic courtly dance. And then once again, it has a very contrasting trio section. It's just almost gnarly in the way that the lines revolve and come out. And then the last movement is this joyful dance. It's whirling and it's just the way that he can bring so many different characters is actually one of the things I find most impressive about him.
When someone listens to this recording, whether they're a novice or an expert when it comes to classical music, what are you hoping they'll discover?
Beauty. I think that would be the goal, really, because I think beauty can touch people in that visceral level. It can touch them on the intellectual level. Beauty has many different definitions, and it means different things to different people. So I would just hope that the purity of Samuel Coleridge Taylor's voice can come through, and also the dedication we put into making the works sing the best in the most authentic way we could.
Getting to know the authentic voice of composer Samuel Coleridge Taylor with the help of the Catalyst Quartet and their new project called Uncovered. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word. And also take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. And since you are clearly a music fan, let me tell you about another podcast you might enjoy called The Piano Puzzler. Every week, host Fred Child invites composer Bruce Adolph into the studio. He plays one of his brilliant musical mind games. He'll take a familiar tune and disguise it in the style of a classical composer, and then a contestant calls in to try to solve the riddle. It's a lot of fun. And if you think you're up for the challenge, you can subscribe to The Piano Puzzler wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to Valerie Kaler. She's the producer of this podcast, New Classical Tracks, from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher.